The Haunting of Miles Morales, written by Quilliam, read by CC Rambles. This is a Spider-Man Spider-Verse Gen Pod and is rated T. His window is open when Miles returns to his bedroom. He never leaves his window open, rarely even leaves it unlocked. There's a boy with his face looking at Miles's bookshelf. Miles narrows his eyes and his hackles raise. He doesn't power on the prowler suit yet, but keeps a finger over the button just in case. "Who are you?" he demands. "How did you get in here?" "You don't have any art or spray paint," the boy murmurs. "Don't tell me you stopped after Dad died." Miles closes his door behind him, mind racing. The kid looks a lot like him, insanely like him, a younger, baby-faced version of him. The hairstyle is different, but other than that... Neither of his parents would have cheated on each other, Miles knows that. He's pretty sure he doesn't have any secret siblings who are put up for adoption. What? Oh, I should introduce myself. The boy glances at Miles and tilts his head to the side, frowning. "I'm Miles Morales from another world. Sorry for intruding. I didn't know where else to go." "Yeah, right." Miles knows bull when he hears it. He turns on the prowler suit and snarls. "Try again, why don't you? Who are you?" The boy's eyes widen and he steps back. "Oh," he says faintly. "I miscalculated." Miles steps forward and wishes he had his glove. It's okay, he can handle things even without his glove. The boy vanishes. Miles's curtains ripple and his window closes. Miles turns his goggles to night vision, UV mode, heat mode. There's nobody in his room anymore. The boy must have left through the window. Heart hammering, Miles locks his window latch, even though he knows it won't do anything against a determined enemy. He'll tell Uncle Aaron about this in the morning. The boy is eating a bagel and reading through the files in Fisk's lab. "Dang," he says, not even looking up. "This is messed up, huh?" Miles, this time properly in full prowler gear, lunges forward. The boy dodges without even looking up. He's still reading the file. Bits of bagel crumbs fall onto the paper. He's real. There's proof. Is his story true, too? "I guess it makes sense that you work for him," the boy says sadly. "But he's a terrible guy, you know. In my world, when Uncle Aaron was prowler and worked for him, Fisk still killed him because he wouldn't kill me. Maybe he's better in your world. Doesn't look like it, though." Miles doesn't need a boy with his face moralizing at him. He knows his sins and he'll count them in hell. "I guess it hurts you more than me," the boy says quietly, knowing what he did to our dad. Our dad, like there's something shared here. This is insane. What game is this guy trying to pull? Miles powers up his glove and pulls his arm back. The boy vanishes, along with the last of his bagel. The file in his hands falls to the floor. Miles rushes forward, grasping at air, but it's too late. The boy's gone. Miles leans down to pick up the file, and there, with a few bagel crumbs, his dad's face and a bounty with his boss's name as employer stares back at him. Miles shoves down the lump in his throat and he takes the file. He sees the boy walking down the street. Miles chases, because he's a threat, okay? And maybe a way to answers. The boy is far ahead. Miles walks fast. The boy stops in front of Oscorp, stares up at its gates, sets his face with determination, and vanishes. Miles knows exactly what's happening. He puts on the suit and goes into Oscorp. There's a body that shows up when he sets the goggles to heat vision. It's a bit strange, electric almost, distinctly abnormal on the heat radar, but it's there, and Miles ignores the discrepancy. Superpowered humans, mutants, often have different heat signatures. It's not unnatural. The boy is going through Oscorp's files, looking at portals, teleportation, dimension travel, and, strangely enough, mutant spiders. Special attention paid to one Dr. Octavius. A hint there. The boy is still flipping through his files when he says, "I know you're there, you're not here for a fight, are you? Because I'm just trying to get home." Miles drops from the ceiling. "Where's home?" he asks. "Another world," the boy says. He flickers, glitching like a bad computer graphic. His heat signature fritzes, almost like it's unraveled and forcibly glued itself together, like restarting a laptop. Miles asks, "Why are you in this world?" "Accident," the voice says. "Messed up trying to get home. Now my dad's in danger, and if I don't get back, he dies." Miles's heart jumps. "Your father's still alive?" "Not for long if I don't get home." Miles stares at the boy and swallows. "It's not inevitable," he asks, a strange feeling in his chest. Maybe this boy has been to other worlds. Maybe Miles's dad is dead in some, not in others. Or maybe this kid is a ghost from the past, haunting Miles, trying to bring his dad to justice. The boy looks up. Miles turns off his heat vision and sees the boy make eye contact. "No," the boy says, voice filled with venom. "I don't care what they say. It's not inevitable. I'm going to save him, just like we've saved everyone." Miles feels strangely dizzy from the pronouncement. The boy asks, "Can you help me?" Miles closes his eyes. What's the point? "My father is dead," he says quietly, "by his employer's hands. Thankfully not by his uncle's, but would his uncle have, if he was told to?" Miles swallows the unease. The boy looks sad and says, "Yeah, okay, I don't know what I expected. You're the prowler here, I guess. You've got your own stuff going on." It shouldn't be a surprise, since the suit's not there, but... "If you're not prowler," Miles asks, "what are you? Why the invisibility?"
I'm kind of a hero in my world," the boy says. "There was someone before, but he died, protecting me, sort of. So I took his place, protecting people, doing what I can."
Miles thinks of the legacy his dad left behind, wonders if the boy is intentionally saying this to push Miles to do something, wonders if Miles would make the same choice if he had been in this other world. "Things are pretty bad here," the boy says, subdued. "I guess because there's no hero here. Maybe me and the others could come back after everything, help your universe out?"
"We do what we can," Miles says.
"I know, but you need help sometimes. That's just life. There's nothing here to help me. Worth a shot. I guess my only option is to wait."
"Wait for what?"
"Help." The boy doesn't turn invisible this time. Miles lets him walk away. The boy doesn't appear again for another week. Miles is ready to put it behind him, ignoring the unsettling experience for life, pretend the file in his mattress doesn't exist. Then Wilson Fisk is taken down. The news is vague, and when Miles calls his uncle says that someone who looked just like Miles was there, that he begged Aaron to stay back, let them handle it, and he did. Wilson Fisk is hospitalized and will be jailed after. Paper after paper of proof of his plans are published. Even his army of lawyers can't save him. The boy appears in Miles's living room when there's no one else there. The TV is on to the 6 o'clock news. Miles's mum is at work. He hopes she won't meet Fisk, though from the grainy shots they have of him, Fisk seems to be pretty incapacitated.
"Sorry," the boy says quietly. "We should have warned you, but didn't want to risk you stopping us. We destroyed the records of the Prowler, of you and your family."
Miles puts his head in his hands. Should he be grateful, relieved? The file in the mattress had haunted him. Miles had the decision between his present and his past, his income and revenge for his father. Now it's been taken out of his hands.
"Uncle Aaron and I are both unemployed now," he says quietly.
"I'm sorry."
"You aren't."
Miles should sound something. He should have emotions here. The words come out empty. The boy looks away and says, "There are a lot of bad people in your world running around unchecked." Miles knows. He looks up and asks, "Aren't I one of those bad people?" The boy frowns and says, "Yeah, maybe. I don't know."
"Will you take me down too?"
"If we have to." Miles closes his eyes. When he opens them, the boy is gone.
"This isn't your world,"
Miles snarls, throwing the nearest thing, his pillow, at the boy by his window. The boy catches it and holds it, looking awkwardly at it. Miles hates him. He hates him.
"You need to leave," Miles shouts. "You've already wrecked my life. Why are you doing this? What's wrong with you? You and your little saver complex need to get out and just..." The boy looks down and closes his eyes, waiting for Miles to keep talking. You're not even listening. Miles scoffs. You come waltzing into a world that isn't yours, meddling into affairs that aren't yours, and just don't even listen. What should I have done? The boy asks. Leave us alone, Miles wants to say. Never come, Miles wants to say. Exhausted, he says quietly. Fisk's estate gave us enough reparation money to get me through university. The boy asks, hesitant. Is this a bad thing? Miles sits on his bed and buries his face in his hands. That's money I earned for him, Miles whispers. Money that paid for lives I took. It was money for one life, the boy says, shaking his head. Think of it as a gift from Dad, if it makes you feel better. It doesn't, Miles shouts. It doesn't, because Mum and Dad thought I was someone else, because they wanted me to be someone else, and now I have the chance to be that person, like I haven't fucked up 1,000 things 1,000 different ways. Don't act like it's easier to just live this life. The boy comes closer. Miles is sobbing too hard to stop him. I gave up this life, Miles says into his hands. I gave it up and I grieved it and I ruined my parents' child and now it comes back to me? Now? After I wrecked everything? Miles, the boy says softly, you haven't wrecked anything. Miles laughs and laughs and laughs. Laughs because the boy his parents wanted is right in front of him and lying, trying to pretend Miles could ever measure up. I don't want to hear that, Miles says. From the ghost of the boy that I killed. From the future he broke apart with his own two hands. We're both alive. The boy leans over and wraps his arms around Miles, ever gentle. Your past doesn't define your future, Miles. Miles has never hugged a ghost so warm. Maybe Miles is the cold one. Maybe the boy was never the doppelganger at all. Settling into Miles Morales, ordinary teenager, living in the aftermath of the boy with his face. Miles didn't realize the sky in New York could be so blue. He didn't realize how much people liked the outdoors when the streets weren't full of prowling dangers and garbage. Hobie wants to know if you thought of taking part in a community garden initiative, the boy says, holding up a houseplant. If not, you can just take this. I don't want a plant. Miles says grouchily, even though about 2 seconds after he says it, he sort of regrets that and thinks, oh, maybe I do want a plant. Whatever. The boy hums and puts the plant on Miles's windowsill without even asking. How are Mum and Uncle Aaron? Fine, Miles grumbles. Prowler's been getting less jobs lately. The boy blinks at Miles like he's asking, and why should I care? He's been picking up freelance construction work. Miles grouches, just on the side. The boy beams like this is a good thing. Uncle Aaron is getting paid less, it just... Well, Miles supposes it doesn't matter as much, what with the cash that Fisk's estate dumped in his mother's account. Does he like it? The boy asks brightly. Work is work, Miles grunts. The boy frowns. School? Miles shoves his hands in his pockets and says, school is school. School is insane, actually, because Miles had been completely disassociated from the student body, because he'd been living in another world, because all his classmates had seemed so stupid and young, and now he's been thrust back into that student body with a vengeance. His mum wants him to join art club. Miles thinks she's insane, even if art club has been painting some really cool props for the school musical. Mum put you in visions, the boy says wisely. Miles wants to punch him. Just a little. You aren't living in the dorms? I am. Miles grounds out. They let me come home sometimes. Trauma and weekends. Huh, the boy says thoughtfully. Should I do that? Miles's face asks what his mouth does not. Your dad is alive. What trauma do you have? The boy's lips twist, sardonic, and he says, you're right, all the trauma happened to Spider-Man, not Miles Morales. Hush, hush. Miles has no idea what the boy is talking about. Well, okay, fine, he knows. The little vigilante thing. But Miles wishes he had no idea what the boy is talking about, and if he wishes hard enough, he can pretend he doesn't know. I know it's hard, the boy says quietly, but you've got a life now. You just gotta start living it. Miles glares and asks, are you living yours? The boy grins wide and says, man, I'm Spider-Man. I'm the anomaly. I got friends beyond dimensional boundaries. I'm living. You're allowed to, Miles thinks, heart sinking. I'm not. The boy leans over and grabs Miles' hand. I know what you need, he says. Miles doubts it. He lets the boy lead him outside anyway. The boy looks different on the streets than in their first meeting. He's bright, bouncy, grins and greets people as they walk past, laughing when they do double takes. I don't know how to explain this to the others, Miles grouses. The boy says, then don't. Tell them I'm a friend. Mammy would want to meet you. The boy tilts his head to the side. Have you told her? Miles gives him his best, are you insane, look, and the boy smiles sheepishly. No problem, no problem, the boy says, and leads Miles right into a sunlit alley. Walls messed up, no art, just a lot of messages with a lot of words but no meaning. A bag of fresh spray paint cans sits by the dumpster. The boy tilts his head and gestures. Miles can't think past the sudden tightness in his chest. I don't know what to do. He manages through the lump in his throat. You know, the boy says. Miles shakes his head. I can't. The boy picks up a purple can. He sprays a line on the walls and turns and holds out the can to Miles. Dad wouldn't want your last piece to be a memorial. He died so you could have a better future in a better world. I made the world worse, Miles says, shoulders hiking to his ears. I went against everything Dad stood for. The nice thing about life, the boy says, is that when you mess up, you can just spray over the mistakes. Miles looks at the boy. He looks at the cans of paint on the ground. He thinks of that black and red suit that, admittedly, looked cool, that he might have worn in another world. Miles picks up a can and starts to paint. The end. Reader's notes. So, this is such a gorgeous fic. I really don't have the words for it. It's such a beautiful alternate take on how Miles could have met Miles 42, like a different encounter. And seeing the whole thing through Miles 42's eyes just makes, the whole thing more poignant and sad and but hopeful as well all at the same time. And it's just really beautiful. The thing that turned out to be more difficult than I was expecting is the fact that despite the fact that there being two people, two characters in this fic, they are both the exact same person. So my immediate instinct is to voice them the exact same way. But then how do you even tell that there are two people having a conversation? So I tried to differentiate it a little bit, but also not to differentiate it too much. And I don't know, honestly, if it even worked out. Hopefully it's somewhat comprehensible who is speaking at which time, by context at least, if not by my vocals.